The calendar dictates that we're not going to be able to play the first two series of the regular season, and those games are officially canceled. The difficult thing about this, if it was solely within my ability or the ability of the clubs to get an agreement, we'd have an agreement. The tough thing about this process is it takes both parties to make an agreement. I'm really disappointed that we didn't make an agreement, and I'm really committed to doing everything possible to get one.
It's going to be really hard to be a professional today. It's the Fan Morning Show. I'm J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Justin Cuthbert. Boy, it's like there's tone deaf and there's just disconnected from reality, and there are people who are oblivious, and then there's Rob Manfred. Like, I know it's his job to be the meat shield between fans and the owners, but to be unquestionably more hateable than David Stern, to be unquestionably more hated than Roger Goodell, is a feat that I didn't think was possible. So shout out to Rob Manfred, because you, sir, among all the chief you-know-whats, you stand high among them all. On a podium all by yourself. Not Rob Manfred's fault. God, why did we play that clip to start the show? I had this kind of like a little bit of a start into this. But then I hear him go, takes two sides. Oh, you know, if it was up to us, you'd be playing baseball. We'd have, if it was up to us, players would make no money. They'd be just playing for the love of the game. We'd be reaping immeasurable profits. And we'd be just, fans would be getting what they wanted, paying for their $14 hot dogs and $20 beers. That's all we want. All we want is all the money and all the control and all the things we want, and we don't really see what the big problem is. That's Rob Manfred there at the podium. That's your commissioner who calls, you know, World Series trophies pieces of metal, who practices his golf swing before he announces that he's going to cancel the season, and then chuckles. Oh, did he have a fun, chuckly laugh as he delivered that he was canceling baseball games and just kicking every single baseball fan right in the teeth yesterday. What a guy. What a moment. What a sport.
I had a normal one yesterday, for sure. I'm not going to overreact to anything. This is totally fine. I'm not melting down at all. It was bad. Bad, bad. And your comparison to the other commissioners, like, look, David Stern got booed, and everyone kind of always realized that David Stern was, like, at least publicly playing a little bit into it, like the old Vince McMahon thing. And David Stern was doing things that were often objectionable, but he helped grow the NBA immensely and lead it to where it is. Roger Goodell, yeah, he's not a likable guy, but like the success there is unquestioned. Even a Gary
Bettman. I'm not even
sure
he is a guy. I think that South Park nailed it. I think he might be a robot. Like it's even, at least like 30% possible.
Even Gary Bettman, like you get the impression that he really believes he's in the right, and maybe in recent years has played into the bit a little bit. But at least, like, in Bettman's case, it's like, well, I disagree with your vision for hockey, but I actually believe that you want hockey to do well. I have no level of that with Rob Manfred. Like, you can go back. The quote that's going to go on his Hall of Losers bust is, I mean, yes, the piece of metal for the World Series trophy, but also the I'm the CEO of baseball thing, where, yes, you're not that. That is true. That's, you've got a board of 30 owners, and your responsibility technically is to them, not to the game and not to the fan base. But that's BS. Your obligation in that role, like, those owners only get to have baseball teams and have lots of money from baseball because of the sport and because of the fans. If you are the commissioner of baseball, I don't care who signs your checks. I don't care who you're reporting to at a board meeting. Your first responsibility is to the sport of baseball. And in that regard, Manfred has been maybe the worst sports commissioner ever, because he doesn't care about the sport. He doesn't care about the long-term health of it. He is saying the quiet parts that, like, none of us are dumb. We all know the score. We know that almost every owner in sports cares about profit at least as much as winning a championship. There are obviously the odd exceptions where a guy has so much money that he's in it for just for the rings and the glory, like you have a Mark Cuban type or whatever. But most of us know these are owned by family trusts or corporations or whatever, and profit is a part of it. But You're supposed to give at least enough suspension of disbelief that we don't have to be hit over the head with it every time we buy a ticket, every time we tune into a game, every time we look at the news cycle. And Manfred has decided, whether consciously or not, that baseball is now the sport of profit first. And yes, again, they're all profit first, but you're not supposed to say that part out loud, and you're not supposed to manage your league and steward your league in a way where that's so plainly and depressingly obvious.
He must be, like, the owners must love this guy, because he has no connection to baseball. He's horrific. It's horrific to watch him. He had a line yesterday where he went, "The concerns of our fans are at the very top of our consideration list."
Nope.
Like, what? What? You just laughed as you canceled games. You just laughed after building up hope in suckers like me the day before that we were actually going to get a baseball season, and that the deadlines worked, and that, hey, okay, you didn't negotiate for 43 days. Whatever. They're going to get this deal done. It's going to be crunch time. They're going to figure it out. They're going to come to some reasonable place where they decide, you know what? Let's not try and kill the $10 billion golden goose. Like, we have a $10 billion pie. We should be able to split this up in some way that is at least reasonable. I think, okay, so Manfred aside, I gotta say, like, that's the part that frustrates me the most, is that it's just, it's a $10 billion industry. $10 billion. Baseball owners keep doing this thing where they cry poor, where Manfred's going up there again talking about how it's harder to make profits now and how they suffered these losses. But we have factual evidence that they're doing better than ever. And it's, I just look at this now. There was the story of the Super League, right, where in Europe they were going to leave the Premiership, right? They're going to leave these leagues, or they're going to stay in them, and they're going to create that Super Soccer League and have it be like a constant Champions League, right? And there was this uproar in the UK that I really admired, where they went, how much of this is eventually for the people? Like, when are we going to start looking at who gets to own these clubs and who owes what to the public? And that's how I felt yesterday, was we need some kind of government intervention with these things. Like, we need some kind of actual somebody who looks out for the public trust, because the fans are not the number one obligation here. They're not the number one priority here. And at what point is it like a baseball team, a soccer team, a basketball team, okay, billionaire owners, that's real nice. I mean, now we're paying for the stadiums with our private, with like public money. We're the ones that are funding these pocketbooks. Every single person that loves these teams is the reason they exist. And then we're felt to be helpless when the sport is trying to divide up the massive profits that we create for it. Like, that yesterday was a crippling day if you're a sports fan, to feel like anything you do matters, or that you have some actual sentimental connection to a game rather than just you're basically a part of a cabal of those public trusts, those corporations, those greedy owners that simply can't say, we're going to take really big profits. No, we need to have the most amount of profits by the down to the dollar.
And this is, I think, part of why this has been extra depressing, is it's such a snapshot of just like kind of the way the world is right now, where like all these owners have come together and it's not enough to have so much. It's that if there's $1 more you could have, or $1 more than the person next to you, you have to have that as well. None of these.
You're an idiot if you don't get that one extra dollar, Blake. You're an idiot. One extra dollar? You left an extra dollar on the table? You're an idiot.
And like, let's. We'll throw some numbers at this. I don't want to go into the weeds of the CBA, but let's look at the economics of sports. Since 2012, NBA salaries have grown almost 100%. NFL, 75%. Baseball salaries have grown 21%. The CBT levels, which is competitive balance tax, that basically the luxury tax that baseball wants to implement, if you don't know what that is, basically baseball's offer, and where they after they conceded a little bit of it, was basically like, yo, we're not going to even increase this at the rate of inflation.
No.
Like, this is not even a cost of living increase for baseball players. And yes, I get it. Most of these guys make billions of dollars. You're not going to, like the average Joe isn't crying for the actual paycheck. No. But it's, we're talking splitting up billions and billions of dollars slightly more equitably. And the MLB median salary has dropped by about $500,000 since 2015. I've talked a lot, and JD, you and I have talked a lot off the air too, about like this, the way the minor league system works isn't just about getting rookies paid a little bit more in the door. It's about the long-term health and sustainability of baseball as a domestic sport option for the best athletes in these countries, right? Whether it's the U.S., whether it's Canada, you know, Latin America, you have more of an ingrained culture and the complex system and stuff. But if you are telling these players that not only, look, we're shrinking the minor league, so there are fewer opportunities there, the minimum salary isn't going up, so you have to become a really good baseball player to make any sort of money in this. And then on top of this, our grassroots system has shifted more and more toward a pay-to-play system in the you know, the marquee high school level events and stuff like that. You are saying that not only is baseball only caring about profit, but from the player side, it's going to nudge further and further toward a sport of privilege. And I think that because you can't, like, look at the salary structure. If you're an elite athlete coming out of North America, are you going to choose baseball if you have a choice between football and basketball, where the economics are a lot more straightforward and it's a quicker path and there's more certainty? I don't think you are. So there's a lot here, obviously. JD, you kept mentioning public trust there. And I think that, look, the Green Bay Packers are the only team that actually economically operates as a public trust. But every one of these owners goes to the city and the state that they operate in and cries poor when it comes time for a new stadium or something like that. Yeah. And it's like, hey, we need hundreds of millions in tax dollars. And the reason you should do this is because the sport of baseball is a societal good, and it helps your community. It helps your city. It brings people together, all these things. And then they turn around in the same breath and they're like, well, that doesn't matter. It's only a societal good in an expanded playoff window. Like, and again, I know the economics of this stuff. It's not that hard to understand what the owners are trying to do. And they dummied the players in the last couple rounds of CBA negotiations. So of course they feel empowered to play hardball here and try to win this one on the landslide again. But the players' last offer was already incredibly owner friendly. It feels like they've taken 95% and they're seeing someone else splitting up that last 5% and going, nah, that should be ours too. And you know, sorry, I'm really upset about this. Look at even something like CBT, like, let's ditch the luxury tax angle of this and call it what it is. It's a competitive balance tax. What does competitive balance tell you? It tells you that this isn't installed because baseball has an economic problem where there aren't enough revenues to cover salaries. Competitive balance suggests, and it's through this tax, it's through the draft pick allotment system, it's through revenue sharing, that this is primarily the economic issues that the owners are prioritizing are economic issues between the owners. The players already aren't getting their fair share of revenues. This is Miami and Tampa not being healthy and getting grievances filed against them for violating even like what you're supposed to do with your share of revenue sharing in terms of not just filling your greedy little pockets and running away with the money the Yankees and Red Sox and Dodgers bring in. It's a competitive balance issue. So it's not, look, I know some people are going to be like, well, the players are playing a game and they make lots of money and they should just do it. No, this is about the long-term health of a sport that is ingrained in American culture. It has one of the longest histories. Look at how quickly we would have turned the page for excitement here in Toronto. This is such a great sport, and they not only short-term losing games right now, and let's be honest, we're all going to come back. The Jays are too.
I don't think we're all coming back. I don't think we're all coming back. I really don't. And
that first three-home run Vlad game? I don't know.
A lot of us who love and are dyed-in-the-wool baseball fans are screwed here, right?
Yeah.
This is what hurts almost the most, is that it's just like, they can be as abusive as they want to be, and we're just there going, well, if you're one of my friends who goes, I can't do this anymore, I'm done with baseball, I'm like, okay, sure, I'll see you in July when I have an extra baseball ticket and you come up in my phone and I offer it to you about how strict your morality is with this whole thing. It's awful, though. All those reasons you outlined, like, you're just scratching the surface, Blake. I guess today, normally I am a both sides guy when it comes to these negotiations. A lot of times I go, well, all right. But usually the both sides comes from the way that players will portray themselves as the everyday man, where they go, what, like I said, the Kevin Pillar, I'm just trying to feed my family line, where you go, man, please, there are people in like Canada, the United States that work multiple jobs and don't sleep to literally feed their families. Don't portray yourself this way. But we should still care about equity. Like, even if it is at a higher level, don't you care about the players that you go and watch actually getting a fair shake? To be given, imagine at your job, you are reaping record profits. Record. And all of a sudden your bosses were telling you that your upward mobility in terms of raises had a cap on it, less than inflation, as we're dealing with a crisis with inflation. Like, it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd. This is not a both sides issue. This is clearly one thing and one thing only. And that's why that Rob Manfred clip is so infuriating. This is a bunch of greedy owners who are so competitive and who, for whatever reason, have disdain for the players that create their product that they want to break them. They don't want to win. They want to break them. They want to. And what are they going to do with this extra money, too? Like, how many of these guys need this extra cash? Like, it's.
They're just going to pry poor around the next corner anyway.
Of course. These guys are always going to be poor. They're the poorest people you know. You don't know what their problems are. You don't know how much their yachts are. You don't know how much it costs to do a private
plane. Do you know how much boat fuel costs right now?
That's what I'm saying. Jet fuel? You think your gas prices are high? You should see the jet fuel right now. I'm the one who's really poor. It's outrageous. It's truly, truly, truly outrageous.
So I've been sitting back here sort of taking in this visceral response, and it's like the perfect confluence. But no, I think it makes all the sense in the world, because this is the perfect confluence in producing a response like this. I mean, obviously, you guys are baseball fans and you want to see baseball, but we can all understand why this is happening and the corporate greed behind it. And it's just something that everyone can relate to. So if you're a baseball fan that has been hard done by in some way when it comes to ownership greed and, you know, business owners wanting to line their yachts with gold plated whatever, you know, you can relate. And this is all about money, and it all comes down to having as much of it as humanly possible when you're looking at the ownership side. I mean, they were willing to make, you know, alterations, to move money around, to give more money to players coming in and being open to that, but they're not willing to inject more money into the system. And that is not fair when, as you mentioned, there has been more and more money pouring into the system and franchise values are at an all-time high.
Sell your franchise if you're so poor.
Yeah,
sell
exactly.
It if you're so poor. If you're so poor and you can't afford to do this, you can't afford to play, then go down, sell your franchise, and go buy a National Lacrosse League team. Like, go somewhere where it's more your speed. Like, why are you doing professional baseball then if you're so broke? And you're right, Justin, it's not. I think what adds the extra layer of frustration here is that it is, like Blake said, it is representative of society right now. It reminds you of in a pandemic where we asked grocery store clerks to come in and stock our shelves while we were unsure exactly what COVID was, that the Westin family and the rest of the, like, again, record-shattering profit grocery industry goes, oh, well, it's not our fault. We're going to take away emergency pay. The government has to do it. It's on the government to make sure that they hold us accountable for these things. It's that there is no amount of profit that is enough. It's just the more, and nothing other than more is acceptable in any way. It's crushing. It's just absolutely crushing.
And I know there's not, like, mechanically, there's not a good way to include franchise value growth in something like baseball-related revenue and how you split that up. That is something that the owners already have as a W, right? Like, it's whatever happens with revenue, we'll argue over how to split that up. But if our franchise grows in value, that's for us. Three baseball teams have been sold since 2012, and they sold for $1.3 billion, $1.0 billion, and $2.5 billion. And two of those teams were literally the Miami Marlins and Kansas City Royals. Like, we're not talking marquee. And the $2.5 billion was the Mets. And, like, the Mets are obviously in a huge market, but that was like kind of a distressed sale in a weird ownership situation. And man, it comes down to, like, I get so frustrated too. Like, I was trying to think of of, you know, to paint the picture of, Jeff Passan had a really good tweet yesterday of, or a piece in his article of, you could take, if you drop the 1,200 best baseball players off the planet and pick the next 1,200 players, baseball would suffer. If you drop the 30 owners and just put a competent, reasonable business person in there, baseball wouldn't suffer at all and might be healthier. And I was going to try to paint some sort of comparison of like, oh, am I coming out to watch Juan Soto or Lerner Enterprises? And I started going through the franchise value list and just got even more mad where it's like, yeah. And Juan Soto was a terrible example to look up because he's probably, other than Shohei, the guy who it's like, no, baseball could be in such a healthy spot right now. You have the biggest influx of young, exciting talent you've basically ever had. Like, this is your biggest window since the steroid era, probably, to pick up momentum with cool top star players who are going to be around for a long time. And you can't bring yourself to do it because you guys can't figure out how to split up the billions.
The owners don't love baseball. They don't love baseball. Don't. Their commissioner doesn't love baseball.
So sell
and if they
your
did,
team,
we'd
man.
Be having baseball. Sell the team.
They love money. I think it's great that you brought up grocery store clerks, JD, because this whole thing is a matter of shelf life, right? This is we are missing two series at least because the owners can outlast the players, right? They have the money. They have the money inside that franchise value. That nest egg is safe. That's why they have all the leverage in the world. When the players start losing paychecks, that's when they'll cave even more. But more shelf life belongs to the players than, let's say, the staffers, the people that work concessions, the people that work parking. Those are the people in April, when they don't have that paycheck coming around, mm-hmm. in Dunedin, across America and in Canada, ballparks everywhere, restaurants everywhere. That's where it's going to hurt the most and the earliest, right? These players, some of them, they're going to feel it. The owner's not going to feel it at all. But the people that are really going to feel it, the people we should feel sorry for and should contribute to this visceral response, are all the people that are going to lose their livelihoods because the owners are trying to desperately squeeze every dollar out of this negotiation.
You know how you know the owners aren't going to feel it? Because they cried poor all through the pandemic, and then their CBA negotiation tactic has basically been, well, we'll just treat this like the pandemic season because that was so profitable for us. Oops.
Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't supposed to say
sorry.
That.
Oh, whoops. Sorry. I said that out loud again. Yeah, no, you're right, Justin. And again, Blake, going back to the public trust thing and why I'm so frustrated and I say there needs to almost be a mechanism against these things is, why do you buy a bar down on Front? Like,
yeah.
Why there?
The Jays overflow traffic. Pre-game,
no duh.
Post-game.
Like, why do you try to sink in a business there? That's why you do it. That's why when they build these stadiums and they ask for that public money, they go, hey, it's not just about the civic pride. It's about, we'll create a whole district that's built around this team where we can inject money back into your city. Cool. We already know that that's like completely overstated, right? Everything. Olympics down. We already know that it's not what they sell it as. But yeah, if you are a server at a bar that's around the around the Rogers Center, if you are a hot dog vendor who waits all winter to be able to roll out the cart and go out and make money outside the stadium, if you are, yes, the guy who walks up and down the aisles, the ticket sales, the beer girl. Like, it's just incredible how easily these owners neglect all of these people and then say that there's civic pride. And then they're the ones who stand up there and accept these trophies first. They're the ones who have the guts to go up there and stand there and go, oh, it was us. We all did it together. We let them get the glory, too. Ugh, it's just, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. I feel sick today. I feel sick to my stomach. And yes, like, I do. I want a politician who's like, we're going to force people to sell sports teams who don't want sports teams. Like, that's the platform I'm here for.
There is a political element of this, too, because, like, baseball and all major sports in North America have an antitrust exemption, right? Like, I know that originally was born out of, like, interstate commerce laws, but there's a reason that they're allowed to operate as monopolies. And it's, again, because of that, you know, hey, this is in the public interest.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. I don't think, especially right now, I don't think it's the bullet a politician would want to use to fight back against baseball. But, like, there's a
I saw one yesterday from Connecticut. I saw a senator from from Connecticut who had a pretty bold tweet about it. So I was like, you know what? Maybe there's going to be somebody in the States. I think it's kind of an actual cheap pop right now for you to do it. But yeah, Justin, what do you want to say on this?
I was just going to circle back on Manfred, so I don't want to diverge the conversation too much. But like, when you're talking about owners that have no heart, like the perfect person to represent them is someone who literally looks like he doesn't have any soul. Like you mentioned robotic off the top. Like it looks like he lacks human qualities with the way he carries himself. Like you
the
can
practicing
see,
the golf swing shot is going to go down as one of the most like unbelievable
also,
photos.
A discernible lack of awareness. Like he just it's and I've had so many problems with the way Gary Bettman's conducted himself more so recently, but at least he understands who he is, why he's hated, and everything that goes into being in his position. Like he understands. Same with Roger Goodell. They have that awareness. Rob Manfred looks like he's essentially a punching bag that the owners strung up there in front of the media, a talking punching bag.
He doesn't care, though.
He might not, but inside, like, he looks dead. He looks dead inside with the way he has to conduct himself. And I don't know if that's him or the product of having to do his job, and I'm not defending him at all, but he seems like the perfect guy to just sort of get strung up the way he is because he doesn't care. He lacks awareness,
but that's
and
it
just doesn't seem to matter to him.
But it's what Blake said earlier, is that he doesn't love baseball and he doesn't care, and he is someone who is clearly very comfortable with lying, even in the face of, you know, he's standing in front of baseball reporters, media that makes their livelihoods off of knowing every detail of this, reporting, sourcing, you know, making sure that they understand all the nuances of these negotiations. And then he goes up there and says, it takes two sides to make a deal and it's not our fault and blah, 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 blah. Like it's
and guess who makes 10 times the median MLB player salary while doing that?
Yeah.
Also, the golf swing mechanics, just we could do a separate segment on that.
He's got to turn that hand over. I don't know if he's taking it back or he's pulling it forward, but like,
well, guess what? He has lots of time. He has an extra couple of weeks to figure it out, because that's the other part of this, is that they went 43 days without negotiating, and now we have to figure out how many days we're going to go without negotiations for this next step. So this is the next thing I want to get in with you guys, because I want to fit this one in too, which is because we've just basically spent the warm-up of our show venting about how frustrated we are, essentially, with the rich. It's like, hey, you know who sucks? The rich. Eat the rich. What do you actually think in terms of the long-term damage to baseball? Because this is the real question that people have kind of kicked around and I go back and forth on. Because, Blake, you just mentioned, hey, baseball's in this place where you can market these young stars and where there's these guys who are going to be around forever. And even as you say it, I go, I don't know if that's true. I don't know if you can market those guys. Because I've made this point a billion times, and I hate sounding overly repetitive, but there's so many things that can occupy your time in 2022 that weren't there when baseball was, you know, America's pastime. Like, think about the amount of shows that you just watch right now on Netflix or Crave or wherever that you're just kind of like, ah, that was all right, I guess. I didn't really feel any way about it, but it was there. It was available to me, and so I ended up watching it. You do have basketball, so much NBA right now. There's so many interesting NBA teams that I lose sleep, literally, because I need to watch games that are on the West Coast. I think hockey, the Stanley Cup playoffs this year are going to be fascinating. Look at the teams right now. I was looking at it today. The Lightning, the Bruins, and the Leafs have combined for 12 straight wins. They're all going to be there together. Like, it's going to be an unbelievably fun Stanley Cup playoffs with a bunch of, like, not amazing, but a top-heavy postseason where there's not as many bad teams this year. And I don't look at baseball with 162 games and say I have any extra room for Juan Soto. I just don't. I don't have an hour to give Juan Soto. I have a highlight maybe to get Juan Soto, but I don't have I'm not watching a whole game until it's the postseason. And so I go, all right, from a national standpoint, I'm not sure if the brand is hurt. And from a local standpoint, if your baseball team is good and it's a beautiful summer day and you can go down to a ballpark and have a beer and watch some of the world's best athletes, you can go watch Vlad Jr., you're going to do it. And then you're going to look and say, well, I like a hat because I want to have a baseball cap. And so you go buy that. And then your little cousin loves baseball, or you want to sell your little kid on baseball because you love it, so you buy them a jersey. I don't know. I don't really believe the people who say they're going to stay away. I believe it hurts the growth of the sport in terms of just having new fans created. It's hard to do that without the actual sport. But I think that one of the biggest issues with this is that baseball knows they're not only going to keep making profits now, like Blake mentioned, that when they do these lockouts and they have a pandemic, they still make money, but that there really isn't any fear about what they're going to do in the future, because ultimately they have a live product, they have that antitrust, and they eventually do get to sell you something that has the name of your city on it.
Well, this is the thing, is it's a short versus long term, right? And short term, look, they're not like they're smart. These people don't get rich. Well, some of them get rich by accident, just how they're born. But a lot of them don't stay rich by accident, right? They know what the economics of their sport look like. They know that these games in April, compared to playoff revenue and the extra TV revenue from playoff games, is a, like, it doesn't really matter to them and the bottom line. But I do, all of my fear around this is the long-term health. And you mentioned, hey, can you market a Juan Soto in a way that gets people to invest beyond, you know, the highlight package or whatever? Maybe not. But here's the thing with baseball is we don't know if they can do that, because for a decade or more now, baseball has done the NHL's getting better with this, and it's the kind of WWE thing that's killed them, is like the brand is the star. You're just pushing the brand, and that's not really relatable to people, and that's not really a good entry point for people. So when you say that, you know, maybe they can't do that, I would argue they can. They just haven't tried. Like, this is the same league that waged a war on people sharing GIFs of cool highlights for like years and doesn't like their stuff shared on YouTube. Yeah. Like, they gatekeep whether
you don't
want to
lose
can...
that GIF money. You don't want to be losing Cacho shoulder GIF money is.
You know what that is? That's called free advertising. Yeah. That's called, hey, you know, the Jays have only sold 40,000 tickets for this upcoming weekend series. You see a clip of, we'll keep using, or we'll, Shohei, you see him homer and pitch in the same game, and you see a clip of, you know, this starting pitcher hitting a ball 500 feet, and you go, yeah, you know what? I will check if there are tickets still available. And Toronto's a poor example because, again, if things are going well, that place is going to be full. But there are other markets where that's not true, and I think that baseball just hasn't done it, hasn't tried earnestly to market themselves better and in a modern way. And this is a failure of Manfred and this leadership as well, is that they seem averse to pushing individual players. And maybe we're seeing why now, right? That the more you push individual players, the more power it gives them in a situation like a labor negotiation. Really, though, I think it's just incompetence and a lack of understanding what fans are looking for in 2022 and how you can continue to make money, continue to protect the game, but yes, also build new fans. Because look, the reason we care about all this stuff and we're not just like, well, there's no CBA, let's ignore it, is because it's an awesome sport that we all care a lot about. It's not hard to market it. You just get out of your
own
way.
But it is an awesome sport. It is an awesome sport. But I guess I fundamentally disagree with the ability to push the stars the same way as other leagues. Because, one...
But let's have them try it first.
I know, but when you go to a baseball game, so, like, when I go... I take my mom to go see Mike Trout. We see Mike Trout get 4 at-bats in the game, and then the rest of the game, you know, he's standing in the outfield. And maybe he makes a brilliant catch, but maybe not. You know, maybe it's just routine fly balls all game. And maybe he gets 2 walks, and you go, okay, if I go pay to go see Steph Curry, I'm going to see Steph Curry hit 7 threes in spectacular ways. There's like, in the NBA, the way they market their stars, the benefit they have is that there's variance in what the stars do and how they perform and how they look. And in baseball, it's like everybody pretty much, it's hockey's problem too with star power. It's why we're so fortunate in Toronto to have Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, because they're actually two guys who are different and play different, and you can notice them in a different way. But think about the rest of you think that there's really that much difference? That's why whenever we do the like third line and down conversations around the NHL right now in a salary cap league, it's like, yeah, it's all the same guy. Like, sure, there's some guys that are better, there's some guys who are tougher, there's some guys who are better goal scorers or whatever, but ultimately they're all the exact same guy. And I think baseball really suffers from that. you don't go to a game and you're not promised something spectacular. Like, it's not a shocker if you go see Ja Morant and he has a bad night. You go, what the hell just happened? You know, like, I paid to see Ja Morant. But at least you see him, right? You see someone athletic. You see someone who can get to the rim in a special way, who moves differently than other human beings. When you go to a baseball game, it's like, the ultimate goal is to create the exact same play that all the other guys do, which is a moonshot home run, which is exciting as hell to watch, but it's really no different if Kevin Pillar hits a moonshot home run or Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hits a moonshot home run, like, in terms of the aesthetic of it in the moment.
I would say there's a little difference in that one of those things could happen.
Yeah, sure, yeah. I just
but no, I get it.
It's tougher to sell the stars for a variety of different reasons.
Exactly. Highlights are homogenous, right? In baseball, it's like you could... It could be a silhouette doing it, and you don't know. Like, don't get me wrong.
It could be literally the pictures or the silhouettes that the baseball players are using right now in their avatars.
And you get a diving catch or a stolen base or whatever. But this is why I think the personality that this young class of baseball stars has is really important too. Where, you look at a Juan Moncada or a Ozzy Albies, and these guys have. Or Vlad, even. Like, there's the level of personality.
But we have podcasts now, Blake. Like, I want to listen to Tim Dillon's podcast more than I want to hear Yon Moncada talk. You know what I mean? Like, the personalities things only go so far, too, in a competitive, like...
Right. And look, if baseball were going up against an NFL playoff game and an NBA playoff game between Steph and LeBron, like, baseball would get dusted in the ratings. That's fine. Yeah. But we have this huge gap of... there's a big gap in the summer to fill, man.
Yes, of course.
So how do you think that, like, figures into the intentions of the owners, right? Like, I wonder...
Huge.
You know, April doesn't matter. Like, we discussed this on Monday. How much does April matter? And I feel like the pandemic almost has set a dangerous precedent. Like, owners had the excuse then to do what they needed to do to secure profits. Now they're doing the same thing because they have that opportunity. But I think they realize, hey, we're profitable come July 1 because the NBA Finals has wrapped up. There's nothing else on, so the weather's nice. Let's fill up these ballparks, celebrate on an American holiday, get everything set up then, and push forward for 2-3 months into the playoffs, expand those playoffs where we can make even more money. Let's make all of our money after two shortened seasons or two seasons affected by a pandemic later on in the season, because that's when we know we're profitable and we're not even going to try to fight it in April, May, June, because we're not as good as the NBA. So why bother?
Well, I think there's a live gate aspect, but there's also building fans and long-term fan affect and kids in the ballpark, like JD said.
But they don't seem to care about that.
They don't. But I actually think that that's...
They also have that advantage, though, of like just... Like Blake said, when we're talking about building long-term fans and having the go-to-the-ballpark thing, you're missing that for a couple weeks, but ultimately there's 162 of these games, right? Mm-hmm. You end up with that many home games. It's still a more affordable ticket. Even though the prices keep going up, it's still more affordable than taking your kid to a Leafs game or a Raptors game. You can take them to a live event in the summertime, kill some hours, and spend time with your kid. Like... There's something to just the ability of baseball that it can be very casual. You can pick it up. You can go during a day. It's a matinee. There's just things that, again, work in its advantage towards even still maintaining that type of an element of, hey, it's a family sport where you can take the kids and the wife and the friends and whatever.
Justin, what you just laid out in terms of the goals and why the owners might be okay with this, I understand that. But I actually, let's approach this from a purely cynical I'm pro-owner and I want the owners to win this negotiation deal. I actually think they've messed that part of it up too, where the things the players were asking for don't take away from that. Like, if you are getting expanded playoffs and extra playoff revenue and the players have conceded on that point and you can lock that in for perpetuity and renegotiate TV deals and stuff, you should not be leaving the table over paying minimum players a little bit more. And I know that's not the only issue, but that's kind of a core one. And I think if you're MLB and you, like, again, if you want the brand to be the star and it doesn't rely on individual players, a way you do that is make the larger, meatier, low to middle class of baseball paid a little bit better, because the trade-off there is that stars at the top are going to be paid a little bit less. And so again, if you're just being completely cynical, the more even the spread of salaries across players, that suggests that, oh, no one star is as important as the game itself, as the team itself. So I actually think they've kind of bungled that as well, where they got the big win that they needed and a lot of other smaller wins. And again, to just come back to where we started, JD, is they it wasn't enough to win most. They have to win every single one.
Yeah, you know, you're right in that it just shows you how foolproof this is, because you couldn't have approached it worse. And you're still with these record-shattering profits. You're still having it where you can sell the Royals for $1 billion. It's idiot-proof. And you know that because these owners are idiots. They have been absolute idiots. And they still have their franchise values go up. And so, idiot-proof business model, impossible cash cow. You can understand how they would be so flagrant with their fans. You could understand why they would be so indifferent to the people that actually care about these products, because they just know it doesn't matter what we do. It doesn't matter what we, how many games we play. We'll always have you. We'll always have this captive audience. And yeah, we can talk about, you know, 20 years down the line, whether or not it's the same way, but they're not, they don't care about that. They don't care about the long-term health of baseball. They care about what it's going to look like over the next quarter. You know, what's the profit over the next quarter? Is the franchise value still going up? Yeah, seems to be. So we're idiot-proof.
They want to have their cake and eat it too. They want that franchise value to keep going up, but they also want to make sure that they're maximizing profit in the immediate term. And I think it comes back to your pivot point, JD, in this discussion is, where is this business going? Maybe there is concern about the sustainability of this business. And if they don't lock in these strict and tight financial parameters that ensure that they turn a profit every year, maybe over time, as this CBA that is still being negotiated continues to wear on through the years, that they start to lose a little bit and they start to have to give too much to the players, at least in their mind. And they realize that this game, they either going to have to put more into it to ensure that it's healthy, or at some point, they're just going to have to get to the point where, you know, they lose or cede some control here. So I feel like it's locking in something that is going to be profitable regardless if the business is thriving. And that's what they're aiming for here.
Yeah, I don't think anything's going to change. I think that it's just only going to get worse, because it's impossible to envision a scenario where they really meaningfully start losing money, especially when they continue to win these CBAs. These guys are smart. Oh, yeah. They hire massive teams of lawyers and financial advisors to make sure that they know that what exact profits that they're going to be making. They're not screwing around here. And the more, like, you don't get more power and more financial weight, and then all of a sudden it starts to turn against you and you start to cede things back. Like, that's always been... I don't want to get political, but it's like, that's why you don't give power to people or institutions or rich or whatever, because rarely do they just go, oh, you know what we're going to do now? Give it back. Like, yeah, now we're gonna give it back out of the goodness of our hearts. I just think, again, baseball has built-in advantages. They are comfortable with where they are. They know they're never going to be the world's number one sport. They're not trying to achieve to be the NFL. They just want to be able to have those franchise values go up, line the pockets of the greedy, greedy owners, and that it's, again, it's a competitive thing where they want to make sure that they're winning, that when they're making these profits, that they're not leaving any money on the table, that they're getting every single cent that they can. We got to take a break. Plenty more on this today.
We need the A-list more today than ever.
Yeah. Boy, yeah. We have Ben Nicholson-Smith on at 7 o'clock. We have Ben Ennis at 9. We're going to do plenty more baseball today, what the fallout of this is, where they go next.
We got Jordan Romano at 9:30, too, to get the player.
Yeah, we do have Jordan Romano today at 9:30. And I feel bad for him as well. Again, it's his livelihood. He's on a team that's exciting. We might be excited to watch it. He was probably pretty excited to play for a team that has World Series aspirations this year and get his season underway, and to make money for the thing that he's worked his entire life at. That's my guess. And then to hear Rob Manfred go, it's your guys' fault, probably felt great yesterday as he laughed and cackled, taking away the sport. Usually my experience is that the guys who have spent their whole life playing baseball and investing their every moment into becoming good baseball players care more about baseball than Rob Manfred. That's just me. That's just my vantage point. Anyways, let's take a break. Let's come back. Let's do the A-list. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD, Blake, and Justin. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The best Blue Jay show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Blake Murphy. JD Bunkus. Justin Cuthbert. And that B. Forgot about A. We're not ditching the A-list with Ailish off for a couple weeks here. In fact, knowing so instinctively that
I
we
hate
need
that
a vibe.
I saw you smirk.
With the forgot about A? You're
ready to do your stupid pun. Yeah,
not even planned. Okay, somebody, I didn't know like that Blake, song was playing us in.
I know, but that's your Twitter brain where Blake goes, this is a good tweet. And I go, I hate it every second of that.
Yeah. You suck, idiot. Knowing instinctively that we need a vibes bump today, Ailish actually sent in an A-list item. So let's do it, Vic.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
So leading the A-list today, yesterday, the Pittsburgh Penguins and PWHPA announced that there will be a rivalry rematch, Canada versus the U.S. Women's Hockey, at 4 p.m. on Saturday, March 12th at PPG Paints Arena. That's something that Jeff Merrick had reported on our station a while back was coming. But the big trickle-down news out of this from a couple of sources led by our pal Haley Salvian, who's kind of been at the forefront of the reporting on, hey, how does the PWHPA take all this momentum of women's hockey and turn it into something long-term and sustainable? It is expected that it'll be announced that a PWHPA-led league featuring Olympians and other top players with brand and network partnership is coming sometime this year. So the primary report there is from Chris Boda of the Hockey Press podcast with our pal Christina Rutherford yesterday. They were chopping it up. Again, you can check out Haley's reporting. But in addition to the rivalry rematch on March 12th, it seems like we're headed toward a PWHPA-led league, which I know Ailish was very fired up for. So that's her A-list item today.
So I think that it's great, and especially I wish the women's soccer team would have been able to capitalize on the same thing, which is you can't really have a tour so much because it does diminish the product. Like, there are diminishing returns eventually if you just start saying, like, and then we're doing a women's, like, Canada versus USA game here, and then Canada versus USA here, and here, and here. There does become a point where you go, okay, now you're robbing Peter to pay Paul.
And what are the stakes after
right,
a certain amount of time?
Exactly, right? And so even for this one, I go, I feel as though, I don't know, maybe it being so soon after is good because it's still raw and emotional and they want to do it. I can't help but think, like, if you're the Americans and you win that game, it's almost way to go. And also, if you lose, it just kind of seems like, all right, well, now Canada's piling on.
Yeah. You know, like, the fact that Poulin was listed on that roster and, like, we just had you on Friday and talked about how you're the greatest clutch goal scorer of all time and all these huge moments. You care about your 38th career exhibition game against the U.S.
Yes.
And yes, I'm sure she does care because, again, this is about continuing to grow the women's game and get visibility on the PWHPA. At a certain point, you're going to want to turn this into stakes.
You know what, though? And I will say this, though, but this is the secondary part of it is so. It does. There's a little bit of awkwardness to being like, oh, we're three guys talking about women's sports. But also, yeah, actually, I do believe that, okay, one of two things needs to happen. Either women need to start watching more sports. Like, there needs to be more women watching sports that are women's sports, right? I think that that is still one of the core issues of it is like, all right, I do believe that there are women out there that want these products, but part of the reason why they haven't been successful is because there is just not enough support from men and women both, right? But if you are trying to attract me, like a consumer who's already telling you that there's so many products out there and you're going to start a women's professional hockey league, I still am curious how it's going to operate in a world where there are two leagues and there seemingly is not a depth of talent that is as big as those other leagues that we like other professional leagues as we have. Like soccer, for example, like we have professional women's soccer leagues, and we should have more, and we should have a domestic league. But the idea that we have, you know, more domestic products is possible because it is a global sport. Hockey still is Canada and the United States. And if you've ever gone to a professional women's hockey game, which I have, many, and you've seen what our Olympians look like against, you know, normal hockey players, like female professional hockey players, there is a massive divide. There is a just, it's a really large gap. And so I don't know how many teams you can sustain where you go, hey, there's the National Women's Hockey League, and then there's the league that's run by the PWHA. Like, I still believe the main thing is true, that those two leagues eventually have to find a way to collaborate or intertwine with one another. Because I just do not think that there is a depth of talent that is going to make it sustainable or possible for it to grow in a way that is what you would hope it would be.
Well, one of the keys to that Bota tweet is that there are, it's going to have some NHL backing. Some select teams are going to be involved.
Which is what the PWHA has always wanted.
And I hate to say it, but they need more. They need league backing. They don't need select team backing. What makes the WNBA so successful is that it's all a part of the bigger brand. This is the peak of basketball. This is what matters, the NBA and the WNBA brand. Mm. The NHL has, like, they need synergy. Like, MLSE, having a team would be so important to raising the profile and making it truly meaningful. Like, the NHL, it's been trying to sort through this. It wants to be involved, but can't be involved unless it can run the show. And I'm just worried that what really needs to happen, which is the NHL backing something that's centralized and meaningful, has all the best players in one spot. Unless you get there, you're still going to be sort of fighting it and fighting that.
But the league has already said that they're not going to come in and kill another league, which is what they would be doing to the NWHL if they just publicly decide that we are the backed league, right?
Yeah, they're in the problem remains, right?
And then also, as much as, okay, it's a very awkward conversation to have, and I know that there'd be some people that'd be like listening to this and would be frustrated with it, but there is also an awkwardness of, you know, a female-created league being killed by the NHL. And I know that a lot of, you know, the PWHA, like, they feel as though this is best, but it's not universal that that is the sentiment. Like, there are a lot of women playing in the National Women's Hockey League. It's kind of been portrayed almost as this kind of, you know, scab league, right? Where you go, like, hey, this is the scabs league, and then the other women are trying to make for something better, and they don't believe that this is the right sustainable model. They believe closer to what you think, Justin, which is that the NHL has to have it backed. But you do need that other league gone. And that's what I'm saying, is eventually I just believe that these parties have to come to the table with one another and figure out a way for the sport to move forward, because it can't do that when you have rival factions that can't seem to figure this out. Like, there's just not enough players. There's not enough eyeballs, and there's never going to be league backing if that is the case.